Our study tonight is out of Isaiah 47, 1 to 15, God's predicted judgment on Babylon for abusing his people. God expects human beings always to treat other human beings with honor, for all exist in the image of God. You look at Genesis 1, 27, the Bible says, God created them in his image, male and female created he them. It's interesting. God expects us always to show respect for another human being because that person bears God's image. And a sin against another person is a sin against God because that person represents the image of God. So that's why it's very, very important to be careful how you relate to other people. However, we all know that man often sinfully abuses his fellow man opposite God's will and God's righteousness. Isaiah 47, 1 to 15 predicts God's judgment on Babylon for abusing his people when he would give them into her hand and discipline in Israel's future Babylonian captivity. And this passage provides insight for us as follows. I'd like to read the passage and then we'll look at it. Isaiah 47. Come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon, sit on the ground. There is no throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for thou shalt no more be called tender and delicate. Take the millstones and grind meal, uncover thy locks, make bare the leg, uncover the thigh, pass over the rivers. Thy nakedness shall be uncovered, yea, thy shame shall be seen. I will take vengeance, and I will not meet thee as a man. As for our Redeemer, the Lord of hosts is his name, the Holy One of Israel. Sit thou silent and get thee into darkness, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for thou shalt no more be called the Lady of Kingdoms. I was wroth with my people. I polluted my own inheritance and given them into thine hand, but thou didst show them no mercy. Upon the elderly thou hast cast very heavily thy yoke. And thou hast said, I shall be a lady forever, so that thou didst not lay these things to thy heart, neither didst remember the latter end of it. Therefore now hear this, thou that art given to pleasures, that dwellest carelessly and sayest in thine heart, I am, and no one else beside me. I shall not sit as a widow, neither shall I know the loss of children. But these two things shall come on thee in a moment, in one day, the loss of children and widowhood. They shall come upon thee in their perfection for the multitude of thy sorceries and for the great abundance of thine enchantments. For thou hast trusted in thy wickedness. Thou hast said, none seeth me. Thy wisdom and thy knowledge, it hath perverted thee. And thou hast said in thine heart, I am, and none else beside me. Therefore shall calamity come upon thee. Thou shalt not know from whence it rises. And mischief shall fall upon thee. Thou shalt not be able to put it off. And desolation shall come upon thee suddenly, which thou shalt not know. Stand now with thine enchantments, and with the multitude of thy sorceries, wherein thou hast labored from thy youth. If so be that thou shalt be able to profit, if so be thou mayest prevail. Thou art wearied in the multitude of thy counsels. Let now the astrologers, the stargazers, the monthly prognosticators stand up and save thee from these things that shall come upon thee. Behold, they shall be a stubble. The fire shall burn them. They shall not deliver themselves from the power of the flame. There shall not be a coal to warm it, nor fire to sit before it. Thus shall they be unto thee with whom thou hast labored, even thy merchants from thy youth. They shall wander every one to his quarter, none shall save thee. Okay. Over 150 years before Babylon fell to Persia, this passage predicted that event. So this is a prediction about the fall of Babylon given 150 years before it occurred. That means it's 80 years before Israel was actually taken captive to Babylon. So think of it. 80 years before Israel was taken captive, God foresaw the abuse that the Babylonians would do to his people. So he already planned his vengeance on them, 80 years before it happened. This demonstrates that God doesn't miss a beat. He knows everything. He knows all the wrongs that occur in life, and he is going to deal with them all. Anyway, Isaiah 47, 1-5 introduces God's severe, shocking future judgment on Babylon. The Lord prophetically called in Isaiah 47, 1 for Babylon to come down from a lofty position of prominence and dominance to sit in humiliation in the dust of the ground. In the ancient Near East, if a person was sitting down in the dirt, he was sitting down in a place of humiliation. Normally you wanted to sit on a mat or on a stool or something, but never on the dirt. And to sit on the dirt and then to have dirt put on your head was a sign of distress. So the nation is personified as a virgin daughter, a young, innocent girl, possibly meaning the city's walls had never been breached, but would now be invaded and overcome by foreign invaders. In that position, Babylon, like a delicate virgin, is described as having to do slave labor in captivity, to be horrifically physically exposed and ravaged in divine vengeance, with God sparing no one. And this is a picture of what happened to many of the people in Babylon. War in the ancient Near East was utterly brutal in every sense of the word. And God was going to administer this type of judgment on them because of the abuse that they venged out to his people. The prophet Isaiah inserted that Israel's Redeemer, the Lord Almighty, the Holy One of Israel, was the one who would exact this vengeance on Babylon for what she had done to his people. Babylon would thus sit in silence and go into darkness, no longer called the Queen of the Kingdoms. Well, God explained his severe vengeance on Babylon would occur because of her errant abuse of Israel. The Lord explained that he would have given Israel into Babylon's hand out of anger for her sin, thus desecrating his inheritance, but Babylon would have abused them. Babylon would have shown Israel no rahamim. Rahamim is a noun formed from the word raham that means soft or gentle. In fact, there's a verb that also implies motherhood from this word. It's interesting. Motherhood, treating her mother, her children with soft and gentleness. The word raham also can dovetail in as a noun for the womb. See, everything's soft and gentle, motherly, and so forth. So the word means soft and gentle, and it means motherly feeling or compassion. In other words, Babylon had no motherly feeling or compassion for his people. So God would show the Babylonians no motherly compassion. Now this is interesting. God expected those who took his people captive to treat them with tremendous respect because they were his people, to treat them with kindness and with gentleness, but they didn't. They abused them. So God says, okay, I'm going to get you. Even toward the elderly, who were culturally respected in the ancient Near East. We don't have so much this respect in our country. We have, to a degree, we have it. In Japan, there were sisters who were twin. They were over 100 years of age, 110, 112, and they were almost revered as gods. Because in Japan, your age is extremely important. White hair and so forth is held in great esteem in Japan. So even towards the elderly who were culturally respected in the ancient Near East, the Babylonians would have violated all ethics in subjecting even them to forced labor. Can you imagine an elderly grandmother, 80, 85 years of age, being forced to perform hard labor? That's just unthinkable, even in our day today, but that's what they were doing. So God would subject the Babylonians in turn to very hard labor. The cause of this abuse would arise from Babylon's lack of a sense of accountability to anyone as a ruling queen of the nations, giving no thought to her abusing Israel. Someone has said absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it did in the antiquity, it also did, and it does today. If a leader gets into power and he thinks that he's unstoppable, or she, either one, often they do what they want, because they lack a sense of accountability. Well, Babylon was like that. Babylon felt that absolutely nobody could beat her. So she just did what she wanted to, and she just took advantage of people and abused people. So God was going to get her. Accordingly, the Lord called Babylon in her arrogant pride that lounged in false security, believing that she would never suffer loss in war, verse 8. Then in one day she would suffer widowhood and a loss of children in full measure in spite of her sorceries and magic spells to the contrary. Babylon's false trust in her wickedness, her false wisdom and lack of a sense of accountability would result in God's judging her with disaster that she could not foresee or ward off with sorcery. God then challenged Babylon's astrologers and magicians to try their best magic to see if it would help save her from his judgment, but that such an effort would only wear them out. For the fire of divine judgment would burn up the sorcerers themselves so that they could not even save themselves. Indeed, such men of wickedness with which the Babylonians would have trafficked since childhood would only go on in their error with none of them being able to save the nation. You know, it's amazing when I go through a passage like this and think of how Babylon had exalted herself and thought that she was unassailable. If you go to the ruins of Babylon today, they have the ruins there. And it's amazing that you have this huge city and there's nobody actually living in it. There are some Bedouins that are camped here and there and so forth. But the power that used to be there is completely gone. It's just like a desert. And you got lizards, you got owls, and all the jackals and so forth, these wild animals that live there. That's it. And it's just amazing to see. This is a huge, this was a world power, and it's just nothing. And all because of God's judgment. So since the Babylonians would have become arrogantly self-sufficient and relying on their sorceries to retain great power over other nations, she would lack a sense of accountability to God. And so she would abuse his people once she captured them. Accordingly, God would severely judge Babylon, exacting vengeance on her for the wrongs she had committed against Israel's people, devastating the nation and giving her the mistreatment that she had doled out. Interesting, the prophet Habakkuk, you probably have heard of Habakkuk. God had prophesied through Habakkuk that he would punish Israel for her sin because Habakkuk complained that Israel was getting by with all sorts of sin. And God says, I'm going to send the Babylonians. And Habakkuk was beside himself. He said, Lord, why are you sending a nation that is more evil than Israel to punish Israel? How can you do that? Then God got back to him and said, when I get done using Babylon to punish Israel, I'll get Babylon. See, it's like the game of dominoes. You know, you lay the dominoes up and then you push one and they all go down. That's what God was doing here. He had the nation after nation after nation. He's going to get with, judgment starts with the house of God, with his people. But after he deals with his people, he's going to get these other nations. Because he's had his eye on all these nations and what they've been doing. So he's going to judge them. So in application, may we sense our accountability to God, always humbly to avoid abusing others. Boy, this is so important. When you read about masters, and slaves and so forth and relationships in the New Testament, Paul says, and you masters, you keep in mind that you have a master. You watch your accountability. So you be careful how you treat these slaves. And if you have slaves who are under you and so forth, because you have a master above you. We can apply that to employers and employees. An employer needs to recognize he's got to be careful how he treats his employees, because God is his employer that makes his business work. So everybody's subject to the Lord. Number two, even if we are called of the Lord to exact discipline on another party, this could be church discipline, it could be a parent and disciplining a child and so forth, may we always show gentle compassion and respect even to those who are disciplined. My father was this way. He was a wonderful disciplinarian. Before he would spank me when I was a child, he made me look him right in the face and admit exactly what I'd done. That, to me, was more painful than the spanking. I often wish he'd just go ahead and whip me, get it over with. But I had to look at him, and I had to confess verbally to him what I'd done that was wrong. And the reason he did that, he told me later, he says, I always wanted discipline to be teaching. I wanted you to know that we were just going after you because we were mad or anything like that. I wanted it to be instructive so that you would learn to avoid doing that which was wrong and shift to doing that which was right. So I tried to teach, and he did very, very effectively. And Dad always spanked only with 3 swats. Mom, not necessarily. She could add 6 or 7 if she was motivated. But but Dad left it only at 3. And but it's interesting. He was very, very gracious about the way he did it. And God wants us to be gracious when we administer discipline. Number three, God's promise to take vengeance on Babylon, given around 80 years before Babylon even captured Israel, shows his keen awareness of and his great hatred of abuse. So we must avoid abusing others. Now, if we have been abused, may we let God take vengeance for us versus taking it ourselves. A wonderful verse on this, because if we try to take vengeance ourselves, we do that which is wrong. Nobody can actually, who's a human being, who's mortal, can take proper vengeance. We have a tendency to overdo it. That's why vengeance belongs to the Lord. Romans 12:19, dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. And that's a quote right out of the book of Deuteronomy, I think. Deuteronomy 32, verse 35. Vengeance is something that God takes. And when he deals with it, it's always just. It's always perfect. And we need to rely on the Lord.